This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, a change for you. Show number 162, recorded on April 10th, 2014. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a wonderful, beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska this week, just for having some great weather. And we post a show with world-class show notes each week out at TheAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, you can contact the show. Send me an email, Jim@TheAverageGuy.tv. You can find me on Twitter at Jay Collison, and now you can call in those questions. Love to get your questions, comments, feedbacks via the phone number as well. 402-478-8450. Call those in. It's just a Google Plus, or it's just a Google Voice number. Just call that in and leave me a voicemail. A few of you have done that, and I appreciate it. And we will play those if they're appropriate. We will play those on the show. And now Home Gadget Geeks is a part of the Geeks Network. Find links to this show and many other great podcasts out at the Geeks Network. I'm having trouble talking today. TheGeeksNetwork.com. Join us in chat. Love to have you watch or listen to the show, and you can find all the navigation. We got a couple different live options, live 1 and 2. 1 is good for the PC. 2 is good for your mobile device. In the upper right-hand corner, out at TheAverageGuy.tv. All right, well, a good friend of mine that I've known for the last 6 years now, 6.5, we started within a month of each other at Gallup, and we talk less frequently now that you've moved to Seattle, Saurabh, but Saurabh Sate, and he's an Oracle developer for Gallup. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me on your show, and it's good to be here and just talk about some general stuff.
Yeah, it's good to have you. You're a tech guy. We were talking about purchasing here in the pre-show just a few minutes ago, and actually the TV I have, the Samsung TV I have, was I called you and said, hey, what's the best thing to do? And we spent about 45 minutes on the phone, and you walked me through and told me exactly what I needed, and I bought it.
Yep. I remember that.
Yeah, you've been a great, and it was a couple years back, and you've been a great resource for those kinds of things. You were mentioning you now use alerts on Slick Deals. That's kind of been, you just set up those alerts at slickdeals.com. Wait for those deals to come to you, and then if it's a great deal, you buy it.
Yeah, Slick Deals. It's in fact slickdeals.net. You set up a free account, and you select the keywords. You create an alert, a deal alert, with the keywords that you're looking for. So if you're looking for malware bytes, just set up malware bytes as one of the keywords, and you can set up your preferences to send you an email right away, an email a day, because sometimes if you have too many deal alerts and there are too many deals going on, your phone would be just flooded with deal alerts all day.
You don't want that. Getting rocked.
Yes. Yeah. So, but sometimes if you need to get onto a deal right away, that's the best way to go.
Yeah. Pretty cool. You're talking, you got malware bytes for free after rebate.
Yeah.
And I've gotten that as cheap as 10, 11, 12 bucks, you know, just regular price that way. So it's a good way to get it done. I'll remind you as well, you know, we have an Amazon affiliate link. So if you go to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon, so if you do the Slick Deals thing and it's an Amazon deal, make sure you come back in through theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. We make a little bit off that, have some great months, and we actually have a couple items out in the Tech Scholarship Fund, and so we should be seeing some new, you know, some new posts come in, over the next couple weeks. In fact, Kevin Schoonover, not that we bought this for him using the Tech Scholarship Fund, but Kevin Schoonover bought a Acer R7 and posted that review out on our site. Saurabh, have you seen that laptop?
Yeah, I have. I saw that on your site. And in fact, if you go to slickdeals.net and you click on the link that takes you to the retailer, you, Jim, have a link to Amazon. But if there is no link, if you don't have a link to any retailer, I suggest there are other ways to make a little bit more on your purchase, get a little bit of money back from your purchase if you go through one of the third-party linking providers that take you to the site. For example, your credit card company or your banking institution that can give you an extra 2 or 3% on your purchase, let's say from Newegg or, for that matter, really? Any other tech product that you might be interested in buying.
Okay. So in other words, so I see, so say I don't have a Newegg affiliate link. Now, we'll say, for example, Dave McCabe over at the Home Server Show, he's got a Newegg affiliate link. So I'd send you over there. But let's, just for example, let's just use Newegg because that's pretty easy. So,
yeah.
So I see it on Newegg, and maybe I don't have the affiliate link. So, but I might have my credit card company might offer me a bigger rebate if I go through them.
It is very possible, yes. So, one of the things that you might want to check is the credit card that you hold or your bank itself. For example, Bank of America has a program called Add It Up. They're going to retire it soon, but what it provides is an extra cashback if you click on the affiliate link for Newegg from the Bank of America website. Chase has it as at Ultimate Rewards. Barclays Card has their Barclays Rewards Boost that gives you an extra 1 or 2% on Newegg without having to do anything different than just using their link to navigate to the website, Newegg website. Okay. And if you don't have a access to a financial institution that has those affiliate links available, or that's kind of shopping links available, there are independent websites like I would cite BeFrugal.com, TotalCashback.com. These sites, you can set up a free account. They have links to all kinds of merchants. You click on them, they will take you to the site, and then they record your click and how much did you, and the purchase would be recorded, returned back to BeFrugal or TotalCashback. And then after a waiting period of anywhere between 4 to 6 weeks or 8 weeks, depending on the retailer or the merchant, your cashback is available that they can actually transfer back to your PayPal account if you so desire.
Interesting. So there are some other options out there. We, of course, in the podcasting community always try and find, you know, I have a Microsoft affiliate link. I have a Woot affiliate link, if you didn't know that. I've got an Amazon one as well, Tiger Direct, some of those kinds. We really like Amazon because it's super easy to manage our Amazon affiliate. You know, you buy it, it just automatically goes into the account. That drops into, they give me a credit, and then when somebody asks me, hey, would you buy me something for the Tech Scholarship Fund, then I can just use Amazon, I buy it on Amazon, I ship it to them. It's super easy that way.
Got it.
In fact, we just bought, you know, these ATR 2100 microphones. I bought probably 15 of them. We've got 10 of them at Gallup that we ship all around the country for Call the Coach and Theme Thursday and stuff. The Audio Technica makes a ATR. It's called a AT2005, same microphone except it's black. Got a little different switch on it. And those came down to $50 this week. These microphones were $35 and they went up as high as $75 and now they dropped to $50. So I pulled the trigger and I sent one to Kyle Wilcox, one of our listeners. He's been on the show from time to time and he had a really crappy mic. And so I used the Tech Scholarship Fund. So he's going to review that for us and
awesome.
Ship that out. So good way to do that. So, well, there'll be more of that where that came from, Sarah. We'll talk some more about that as we dig into this idea of a mobile wallet. So hang tight. For one more second, we started the show with me saying Home Gadget Geeks, and I was so surprised this week as I started tweeting about this, and people were like, what are you talking about? When did this idea come up? And it actually took me a little bit by surprise. We talked about it at the meetup, the Home Server Show meetup back in Indianapolis. You know, Dave McCabe, for the regular, if you're a regular listener, you probably know Dave McCabe over at homeservershow.com. He's started the Geeks Network. And so I'm sliding into that network a little bit, or kind of joining him in that. And so I had this idea. I thought, well, no one could remember Home Tech anyways, right? I mean, even guys that have been on the show several times, they want to say the Average Tech Guy podcast or the Tech Home. And they just, it's so funny. No one has ever gotten this, even as short as Home Tech was. It was so obscure. No one could remember it. It was funny. At first it made me mad. Then I just laughed at it. And I'm like, oh, and by the way, if you went to iTunes and you searched on Home Tech, it was so generic that the show never even came up. So you couldn't find us in iTunes. It was bad branding. It never really worked very well. And we are really such a geek podcast, a podcast. We always talk about these gadgets all the time. That's kind of where we've landed. Gadgets from lighting to microphones to home automation devices to your PC to your phones to those kinds of things. That's kind of what we talk about. So home, I'm going to kind of restrict it to things that are in your home or that you use in your home, and to, you know, this idea of a mobile wallet that's a personal device for you in your home and what you do. Gadgets, so we're going to always talk about kind of the weirdest gadget things going on. You know, we had, and even some, I'll include, like, we had LastPass on a couple weeks back, right, which is another topic we should probably talk about because everybody's passwords are now out there in the clear, apparently, right? And so LastPass is away. So we'll talk about those things as well. And then geeks, right? That's what we are. We all for most of us here that listen. For you that listen, the chances are, if you're a listener of this show for any length of time, and we've got 162 of these, you're probably a geek in some regards. So home gadget geeks. I've been floating that out there for a while. It kind of rolls off my tongue nicely. It's something that's easy to say. It has a little bit more of an identifiable brand than that home tech did. And we're also, you know, Dave is going to change Home Server Show, I think, into Home Storage Geeks. And so we've got some brand separation there as well. So Home Gadget Geeks is here. The new logo is up. So if you refresh your iTunes feed or however you get it, the new logo is available out there to grab. Jace Heiser is actually my design guy that's been helping me out with it. Jace is a local high school student. He's 16. He's kind of like an up-and-coming Christian Johnson. But for design, the guy is an amazing designer. So you're going to see whole new branding initiative that goes on at theaverageguy.tv. That site will change in the next couple weeks, and the content will still be the same. We're still going to have some great interviews. We're still going to do some great stuff. Just changing the name a little bit, Home Gadget Geeks going forward. Then there'll be a small segment that I'm going to start this summer called Home Tech Tips that will be really good stuff. Like tonight, Sarab might have a really good tip, like the one you just gave, Sarab, just a minute ago about your credit card, you know, using the online, you know, going to your credit card's website. They might have an affiliate link. We're going to take that, crunch it down into just a few minutes, and then I'm going to post those to YouTube separately so that people can get these tips very, very quickly type deal. So that'll be Home Tech Tips. So the home tech name is going to stay around. It's just going to go into tip mode, and the rest of it, Home Gadget Geeks, starts tonight. So if you're out here, if this is the first time, and sorry, congratulations on being the first one on Home Gadget Geeks.
Thank you.
It's good to have you. Okay, so that's the explanation for you guys. Hopefully over the next couple weeks, I'm sure I'll hear more about that going forward, but that's what we're doing going forward with the podcast. All right. Let's talk a little bit about mobile wallet. I was telling you earlier that, you know, back 25 years ago, I was a banker. I did retail banking and mortgage loans and those kinds of things. And the bank that I worked for was, think about it, 25 years ago, no internet for the most part, right? Internet is there, but you're not doing much on it, right? We really didn't see a full advent of the internet until 1995 for the most part. So 92, this would have been 92, 93. We had phone banking. You could call in and schedule payments, and they'd send out checks and this thing called telephone banking. Ah, man, I put everything on that phone banking and blah, 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 blah. Then the internet came around. It still wasn't that great, and I used Microsoft Money for a while. Money was a great program. I went all the way to version 13. From 3 to 13, I updated. I did all that stuff. I kept it all online. Then Microsoft stopped making money. And I got tired of managing my finances, and I never made the jump to completely online. I still struggle a little bit to get online, and so I'm missing some of these. There are some things going on right now financially with tech that I'm missing. One of the areas that you are very knowledgeable in is this idea of a mobile wallet. So how do we take our phone and those kinds of devices and how are they being used today? And I'm the average guy. I'm telling you, I don't know any of these things. I mean, this is new to me, and so hopefully as a listener, it'll be new to you. Let's talk about the mobile wallet and what does that mean, and where are we going with this? So get us started on some of these concepts around the mobile wallet.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for having me, Jim, once again. I just want to go a little bit back, a couple years back. It's the whole idea. I mean, a lot of us listeners on the show have credit cards, debit cards. You know, an average American has 3 to 5 credit or debit cards with them. Now, there's been this whole idea for a long time, and for most part, you know, these credit and debit cards have had this magnetic stripe at the back for years now. They've not really changed, even though when you travel outside the country, you would see in Canada or even in Europe, you would see those cards with a special chip on it. They call it the EMV chip, Europay, MasterCard, and Visa. And the kind of cards that we have in the United States, they don't really work on automated terminals outside the country, because those chips are the ones that contain the encrypted card information that is required, but this country has kind of been not progressed that far.
Slow to adapt to it. When I went to Europe last year, I was in Germany March of last year. In fact, maybe you and I talked about this. I remember maybe we had a conversation about payments overseas. But anyways, I called my credit card company and said, I'm going overseas. Can you please send me the chipped version of my credit card? And so now, let's see, you know, so now, like on my cards here, I won't show the number, but on the, I'll cover that up. On the back of my card, right, it's got that pass identifier, which means it's got it's chipped, right?
And it's chipped, but it's not the same chip that we are talking about. This is the PayPass. This is one of the things that's been around in the United States for years now, except that it's not accepted on a good majority of the other retailers.
Right.
They don't have the infrastructure or the readers to accept these kind of cards.
Yeah, so I can't use this here in the U.S. I used it all over when I was in Europe, but for the most part, it's not being taken, right?
Right. And in fact, these cards have changed as well, because what you're showing right now, and I got the same similar one in my hands here right now as well. You know, it's just the symbol, PayPass or PayWave. Visa calls it PayWave. MasterCard used to call it PayPass, and it's just an RFID chip in the card that's embedded, which transmits your card information without actually having to swipe the magnetic portion of the card. So you bring it close to a reader, and this RFID chip, just like RFID works, you know, it's just going to pass along your credit card information to the reader. The EMV chip that we're talking about that's used more, it's a little more advanced. You would really see the card chip right up front, and it's different from this RFID in the fact that it encrypts a lot of the information that gets passed along. And it can be PIN-based, because this technology, the PayPass and the PayWave, is just contactless. It does not require you to enter a PIN number. The new chip cards, which they call the EMV cards, which U.S. is going to have by next year, October, that's kind of the mandate from Visa and MasterCard because of fraud liability concerns. I mean, we'll see that the credit card issuers coming up with those EMV cards over the next year and a half, and those would require you over a period of time to insert your card in the card reader and enter a PIN number to be able to use this card. And that's kind of been kickstarted, and this initiative has been pushed forward quite a bit by the recent Target breach, because if there were EMV cards in this country, it would have made the Target breach much more impossible, much more difficult, or hackers to create counterfeit cards much more difficult compared to what they can do with the traditional magnetic stripe cards today.
And so why is it, what changes the situation so that, you know, today my credit card number gets out there? Target somehow gets out there and people can just use it. So what physically, because I have to put a PIN in, or what's the difference?
That's one reason. Plus the chip that's out there in your card contains your information that's in encrypted format. And so it depends on how the bank chooses to implement the technology in the EMV cards. It's not necessary for that EMV card. When you use that card at a retailer or in a restaurant, insert your card in the chip in the card reader, it's not your card number that's passed to the reader. Mm-hmm. It's a one-time use encrypted token that's passed to the reader that goes back to Visa and MasterCard or to your bank for authorization. And so if anybody is able to intercept that one-time token, they cannot recreate your card. And even if they are able to somehow, it's not going to work because it's just a one-time use token. So they're not passing along your credit card number, just like you would when you swipe your magnetic card. They're not passing along your actual number. It's a one-time token that's generated by the chip in your card that gets passed along, and that's much more secure. Plus the fact that you might have to enter a PIN or sign for it, depend. So there are two varieties. There's either chip with PIN and chip with signature. So depending on what banks choose to implement, it makes it much more harder to for a hacker to take control and use your card fraudulently.
And so it's like dual factor authentication then, basically, right?
Exactly. It's been a situation of, you know, who blinks first, because the amount of fraud in this country, in-store fraud, is still, as a percentage of the total payments that go in, is still very small. And that's why banks and financial institutions have not really pushed towards chip cards. It costs them a little bit more, actually quite a bit more, a couple dollars for a chip card versus, say, 10 or 15 cents for a magnetic stripe card. And that's why they have been slow to adopt these cards. But October 2015 is a deadline when the fraud liability shifts from MasterCard and Visa and the financial institutions to the institution or the entity that has the lower level of fraud detection. So it's either the retailer, if they don't accept EMV cards, it's they who will be responsible for the fraud. If it's the card issuer that's not issuing the chip card, it's they who will be responsible for the fraud if it happens. So that's why there's an urgency for financial institutions to send those new EMV cards to their user base, and for the retailers to have readers to accept those.
And will they still have magnetic strips on the back?
Yeah.
So it'll work still the old way if you need it to.
Yeah. So the current plan, the way banks are planning to roll this out, is they will have the chip on it, but since not every retailer or the restaurant around in the country would have the new readers to accept those. Although 95% of the new readers being shipped out today have the capability to accept the new EMV chip cards. But they would still have the magnetic stripe cards in case you need to use it. But over a period of time, we'll see those disappear. It'll take a couple years, but chip will become the format for the future.
Yeah. Okay. So we got some big changes kind of coming up here in the next year or so, year and a half, 18 months as we make that switch over. Mike Howard, who actually works at Waffle House and is kind of involved in some of those things, said that any fraud that happens is fully the responsibility of the merchant if they have not converted to the chip-enabled credit card machines.
Yep.
Yeah. So accountability, right?
Accountability. Yeah.
I mean, right. It's instead of Visa and MasterCard taking the hit, because they have taken all the hits on these things, right? They're the ones who've been backing up a lot of the financial institutions.
Yeah. So it's actually from what I understand, it's more on whichever is the weaker party in the whole transaction pays for the fraud.
Yeah.
If the retailers have not upgraded, then they will be forced to bear the cost of all these frauds.
So the other Jim in chat says that I wonder about all those Square readers on iPads. So have you heard at all? That's certainly, I mean, those aren't chip enabled, right? So what happens there?
They are not. In fact, that's what we've been talking about, is still using our own plastic cards, except that there will be a chip enabled in it. And the Square readers definitely are still magnetic, and I hope Square checkout strands or the newer versions will have the ability to read those chips going forward, because I was in Canada, Vancouver recently, and you know, I went to a restaurant and they put this reader in front of me when it was time for me to pay. And I did not know about this. You know, I handed my card to the server, and he handed the reader back to me. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? What I was actually supposed to do was insert the card in the reader myself, yep, enter my PIN, and then you know, select the tip on the reader and then pay that way, except that my card was not chip enabled. So he said, no problem. He took my card back to some other reader terminal. They probably were equipped for both. But and he used the trim magnetic stripe on my card to charge me, but it was good.
Yeah, there'll be some changeover. Same when I was in Europe buying gas, and I went into the gas station, and you know, I felt like such an idiot. I just didn't know what I was doing, and the guy just pointed to the reader. He's like, "I don't want to touch your card. Just put your card in there." And yep, I put it in there, and I'm like, "Do I pull it out?" Now this is in German, right? So I'm trying to converse with him in German about this, and it didn't go as well as it could have. I did get out of there, and I did pay for the gas, and it was really expensive, but we got that done. Hey, so that kind of covers the cards. Let's talk a little bit about what's coming with with maybe mobile devices, because there's some new stuff coming, and I shouldn't say new, but maybe new to some, we got some listeners, right, who, like me, I'm not using any of this stuff. So why don't you walk us through a little bit of that?
Yeah, so like the technology that we've been talking about, the PayWave, it's more RFID based, but about 3 years back, when Android devices started coming out with NFC chips in those, you know, I guess it started with the Galaxy S2 and then some of the phones around that time period, 2011. That's when everybody started talking about mobile wallet and how you could actually consolidate all your different cards that one might carry, 3 to 5 cards an average American might have. Put all those cards in your mobile phone, because that's a device that everybody would be carrying around, a smartphone. So how can you put all those cards on your phone and switch the card that you want to use and pay through this NFC technology, the near field communication? So that's when the whole thing started. Google supported it in a big way through Google Wallet, except that it's the wireless providers in the country that control the phones. You know, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, and they did not let Google Wallet access the NFC chips on their phones. So the ROMs, Google Wallet was essentially blocked out from all the smartphones, and at least in the United States, by the three major providers, AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. The only provider that supported Google Wallet at the time was Sprint, and that too with Citibank and MasterCards. Google came in pretty big. It didn't work. I would say it did flop. You could call it a failure. And part of the reason was because a good part of the market was blocked from them. They couldn't access it just because the providers wouldn't allow Google Wallet to work on their phones. So, and also part of the reason was because Verizon, T-Mobile, and AT&T had been working on a joint venture to form a company called ISIS, which is currently out there. You know, they have their own mobile wallet, so they have their own plans for enabling mobile payments, and they didn't want to miss out this future revenue stream that they could potentially get from people using their phones as credit cards or payment providers. So they wanted to block out Google Wallet and have people use ISIS wallet. So that's where it all started.
It does seem like it just hasn't gotten the traction. I mean, this seems like an incredibly complicated and complex, at least here in the U.S. It's tough to get everybody on the same page, you know, using, right? And everybody wants a cut, you know, in this. It's a terribly lucrative, you know, there's lots of money to be made, and you want to control the transactions that are happening.
Yeah, and that's true. And in fact, up until now, since credit cards, plastic cards, there's been a well-defined chain of merchants or parties that's been involved. You have the credit card, the institution that receives the transaction, the one that accepts, and the one that finally processes it, and then you have Visa, MasterCard in the middle. That's been a pretty well-defined. But with mobile wallet coming into the picture, everybody wants, it's a new technology. It's not, people don't know about it yet, and everybody wants a share of the transaction fees, anywhere between 2 to 5% that is charged to the merchant. They want a share of this, including the wireless providers, technology companies like Google or Square, or for that matter, and wireless providers, like I mentioned, Visa and MasterCard are out there as well. And that's why it's been hard for this technology to gain traction in this country.
Yeah. Let me remind listeners, too, if you're listening and you're not in the United States, a lot of what we're talking about is fairly U.S.-centric. As I'm reading the chat as we're going along, of course, you know, tonight we've got Australia on the line as well. It's mid-afternoon over there for them. And so there's been some discussion going back and forth about how it might be a little bit different in Australia. Of course, Lopta coming from the UK years ago. There's some international feel there as well. So it may be different in your jurisdiction, so to speak. If you're outside the United States, I have not used Wallet or this. Well, I have a Sprint phone, so I wouldn't do that. But so does Google Wallet on an Android phone? Is that blocked then? Is NFC blocked? And how would I make a payment? Is anybody even accepting payments that way at local merchants at this point?
Absolutely. In fact, Google remained blocked on some of the three wireless providers in the United States for a good 2 years until ISIS launched. And but Google had on its own plans. So it had been working around, it had been working on a technology called HCE. It's called host card emulation. So NFC, the basic premise of NFC near field communication is that it requires you to have a special SIM card called the enhanced SIM card. So your all your credit card information is stored on the enhanced SIM card, which is provided by your wireless carrier, and that's why they were able to block Google Wallet from accessing that enhanced SIM card. What Google has done with the recent version of Android, KitKat 4.4, is that they have come up with HCE. What it does is it essentially bypasses the enhanced SIM card, and it allows the NFC chip to directly access and authenticate your credentials and store the credit card details either in the cloud or as a one-time token on your phone. So you can do that essentially bypassing enhanced SIM card and therefore bypassing the wireless carriers that are trying to restrict Google Wallet from taking going mainstream. So
those dirty rascals.
So if you have a KitKat-based...
and I do. GS4 is KitKat.
There you go.
Sprint. Yep.
So you should be able to Google Tap and Pay for NFC. You should be able to use it on just about any AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, or Sprint phone. And coming back to your question about are there any merchants accepting it, I guess it's the question of who blinks first. There aren't merchants who have terminals with NFC capabilities. I mean, some of them have it, but a majority of them don't. And the part of the reason is that there aren't people using cards or phones to make payments. On the other hand, people are not using mobile devices to make payments because there aren't enough merchants accepting those. So it's a question of a chicken and mouse, you know, who cat and mouse, in fact, in going around in circles. One of them has to take the step forward to for this technology to gain traction.
Is there any financial? So let's think about Google Wallet. Are there any financial incentives in place for me? I mean, so sometimes these companies will put financial incentives in place to get customers rolling. There, from a customer standpoint, are there any incentives there that you could take advantage of right now?
So from Google Wallet currently. From what I understand, they do not have any promotions running, but ISIS, which is a joint venture between T-Mobile, Verizon, and Sprint here, T-Mobile here in the U.S., the three big providers, they have quite a few good promotions running. If you are a subscriber to one of their subscribers and you have an enhanced SIM card that you get for free from them, you can go to paywithisis.com. Download the app, enter your cards, which currently they're restricted to either American Express, Wells Fargo, Visa, or Chase Freedom cards. You can add one of those cards to your ISIS mobile wallet, and depending on the card that you're using, there are incentives. And plus, they've tied all of this stuff with the loyalty card programs as well. So you have a coupons in your ISIS wallet, for example, right now. American Express server has a prepaid card that you can, if you don't have a compatible card that you'll be able to add to your ISIS wallet, you can apply for a prepaid card. That's for U.S. customers only again. It's called American Express Serve. They give you $50 for signing up, and every time you use that card, they give you $1 back on every purchase if you use that card through the ISIS wallet. So even if you do a dollar purchase for a dollar, you get $1 back. And a couple months back, they were running a promotion where you were getting as much as a 20% cash back on anything that you used your American Express Serve for through your ISIS wallet. And that was great because you don't really have to find places. And the way I was able to take advantage of was I have a drugstore nearby, Rite Aid. So you go to Rite Aid. They accept NFC payments. And you can go pick up a Visa gift card for $500. And since you get 20%, pay with your NFC American Express Serve, and you get $100 credited back to your card. Hmm. Wells Fargo is doing that right now for your Visa card on ISIS wallet. So if you sign up for a Wells Fargo, add your Wells Fargo Visa card to your ISIS wallet, you're getting 20% back till the end of this month. I know there are customers in New York City who are getting cash back from American Express Serve for every taxi ride that they pay for through their phone, using the American Express Serve card. So ISIS has been right in the forefront of promotions because they really want to gain traction before any other competing technology or competitor comes up.
Yeah, so I mean, some great ways to take advantage. Again, they want to entice you into using this. Eventually, those incentives will go away, and they'll lower. You know, you'll pay for them. And what about and somebody asked this in chat just a few minutes ago. What about online web transactions? Either through credit, you know, certainly you wouldn't use Google Wallet for that. But you know, today, if I'm going to make a transaction, I'll just get my credit card out. Type in the numbers, type in that. I mean, is that going to change in any way in the future with more two-factor or how, what do you know about that?
So, yeah, so you will still have your plastic card with you. You will still have the numbers, except that you will have this loaded on your mobile wallet that you can use to make in-store payments rather than having to carry like six cards.
Right.
I mean, I normally have six or seven cards, and for a reason, because each card gives me a specific advantage, an extra cashback for a different type of purchase. A home improvement purchase, or
write that on the card so you can remember, because that's a problem with me. I can never remember. I need like a program, right, to tell me which card gets the right cash back.
Once you get used to it, once you use it a couple times, I guess it's just
I would need a cheat sheet. I'm just saying, I would need a cheat sheet. But like, what's the most rebate amount you get back for? Because these are like specialty rebates, right? Go to Home Depot, or go to, if you buy, you know, groceries, you get some kind of percentage back. What's the most rebate you get on one of those cards?
Well, I've seen as high as 50%.
Wow. For what?
for iTunes purchases right now. American Express is running. In fact, it's 100%. You buy anything for $5 on iTunes and you get $5 back from American Express. If you use their if you add that offer to your card. So American Express has this wonderful program called Sync, but that has nothing to do with mobile wallet. You can use it either through mobile wallet, or you can use your plastic card to do it. But coming back to your online purchase, you know, there are definitely, like we were talking about mobile wallets, there are online wallets too, and everybody's trying to get into that segment as well. It's MasterCard's come up with MasterCard. It's called PayPal, MasterPass. Visa has come out with V.me. Google Wallet's obviously out there. So essentially, you add all your cards irrespective of, let's say I have an American Express, a Discover, a Visa, a MasterCard. I can add all my cards to a V.me online wallet. And if there's a merchant that accepts V.me, I can check out without even having to enter my billing address or shipping address or the card that I want to use. So I'm not really providing my credit card information to every merchant that's out there. I've entered it on my Visa wallet, electronic wallet, online wallet, and I'm just using it at individual merchants who just authenticate and provide the funds to the retailer.
You have this on your list, and Tim was talking about this. PayPal has a two-factor. If you use them, right? They have two-factor?
PayPal does. In fact, PayPal has come up with mobile, has their own mobile wallet as well. It's a little different than what, it doesn't use NFC. It does not use any RFID or you know, any NFC on Android. They use very simple, let's say you were to go in Home Depot and say, I want to pay with PayPal. If you registered your PayPal account for in-store payments, you would enter your mobile phone number, you would enter your PIN, and that would further charge the default card that you've set up in your PayPal account.
Would that give them something to then beep so that the payment's made, or how does the transaction take place?
So you can set up your PayPal account for immediate SMS alerts, or you get the receipt directly emailed to you, which tells you that this is what you purchased.
How does that transaction take place?
So let's say you go to Home Depot, for example. Right. You bought something, and just at the checkout, rather than pulling out your credit card, you tell them, I want to pay with PayPal. And that's where you do...
Really? You can do that at Home Depot?
Yes, you can. PayPal has a very good tie-up with Home Depot, and that's one of the biggest merchants that accepts PayPal.
Okay, so just tell them, hey, I'm going to pay with PayPal, and then what? What do they do? You do something on your phone, you put your phone number and your PIN.
No, you have to be set up. And when you go to PayPal account, you can set up. You'll see on the left-hand side, there are links out there. One of the links you would see is for in-store payments. You can enable your PayPal account for in-store payments. You'll set up a four-digit or six-digit PIN number, and that's what you will need to enter in store at the Home Depot terminal to make your payment through your PayPal account. And that further is charged to the card that you've set up as the default, which in most cases happens to be your bank account first and then one of your cards in that sequence and how PayPal charges it.
Yeah, they want to take whatever, they want to go checking first and then credit card, right? Because they don't want to pay the transaction fees.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike Howard was talking in chat really earlier. There was a conversation going on. And, you know, the illusion that we as customers or we as business owners aren't paying for a lot of this fraud and a lot of these things are going on. It's just that. It's an illusion. All that stuff is passed on. I mean, Visa and MasterCard are multi-million dollar organizations. They're not doing anything for free, right? They're passing along those costs to you or to the merchant in the form of fees or transaction fees or those kinds of things, right?
Exactly. And I think it reflects in the stock price, which have been some of the best performers in the market, both MasterCard and Visa, I guess.
They seem to have figured it out. Yeah, Americans in particular love easy, quick payments. They don't want to be bothered by them, right? They just want to be able to get in there and get out and get it done. And it's probably not an American phenomenon. Sarb, we don't talk about this very much, but you're still in touch with your parents in India. And that's a big, gigantic market. And I don't even pretend, I don't think I have anybody in India that listens to this show. So I don't want to spend a ton of time on it. But what's the state of all this stuff in India? I mean, is there as much mobile purchasing as going on here? Do they use the chip cards? What's happening there in most cases?
I would say even credit cards don't have that much, have not gained as much traction as they have everywhere else. India is still a very cash-based society. So you really, even merchants don't even accept credit cards. They're happy to accept wads of cash that you might bring into the store to, let's say, purchase a TV.
Wads of cash. That's the golden ticket right there.
That's right. So even credit cards, and part of the reason is just because of transaction charges. You just said nothing comes for free. You know, the fraud charges and all that stuff that costs. MasterCard and Visa will tell the consumer that you're not liable for anything, but at the end of the day, they're not paying out of their own pockets as well. They're getting charged from somewhere.
Yeah. Well, the merchant's paying, and then they're raising their prices, and you're paying. So it's
right.
It's the circle of life.
So, and part of the reason some of those countries are interest rates are so high that even for traditional, like a mortgage, you know, that interest rates on credit cards are anywhere between 24% to 36% to 48%. And I'm not kidding. So rolling over, keeping a balance, and trying to carry it forward is just not possible. People prefer to just pay in cash. Plus, the transaction fees are so high that the credit cards are picking up, but I would say even before India goes to a contactless payment like a mobile phone or something like RFID-based stuff or Bluetooth iBeacons kind of stuff in the future from Apple, it still needs to gain traction against to pick up on credit card use, which is still not there.
So the next time I'm in India, I just need to take wads of cash with me.
You bet.
I'm taking you with me, by the way. The next time I go, you are coming with me, my friend. There's no way I'm going to that country alone. That's not going to happen. So, well, interesting. Yeah, I don't want to spend a ton of time there. Anything else in those prominent players right now when we talk about wallet and some of those other, you know, I tell you what I use the crap out of, and that is my Starbucks app, right? And I don't know if you'd call this an in-app purchase. Maybe you would, right? Because yeah. I can load my account from the app. But that Google app, or I mean that Starbucks app, is dynamite, man. I can put money on it. It keeps track of all my gift cards. It keeps track of all my rewards cards. I just show that thing when I get there and, you know, beep it, and man, it's paid for. Are in-app purchasing like that, especially in the rewards card? Do you see that catching on at all?
That in fact, I think that will catch on going forward because, like I said, up until now, mobile payments through NFC, which has been the primary mode for payments to mobile devices, kind of the de facto, the main, has been controlled by wireless providers. Now, with Android 4.4, the things changed. Google's kind of cut out the wireless providers, and it's saying, well, anybody who's an app developer can use, and in fact, Visa has already come out with host card emulation HCE APIs that an app developer could use in their app to enable mobile payments directly without having to access the enhanced SIM card that the mobile wireless providers control. So what I see happening is even banks like Chase or Wells Fargo or American Express, who are paying today to rent space on the enhanced SIM card to store credit card details for you through just like ISIS wallet, will probably enable this mobile payment capabilities through their own apps. For example, American Express, if you have an American Express card and you have an American Express phone app on your phone, they could make the American Express app mobile payment friendly through Android 4.4 HCE. That's going to be possible because they don't really need to store all those details. They can store all the information in the cloud and then access it either directly online or through a one-time use offline token that could be stored in case you don't have access to a network at the merchant site.
Okay. So that the in-app and that's really it's not the right. I don't feel like that's the right terminology.
But that's going to open up a whole. It's going to open up mobile payments to a whole new brand of providers, app developers. But the biggest concern out there is security. How would that be secured? And that's the question of everybody's mind. And nobody's. It's a very recent framework that's been launched by Google supporting HCE back in November, just about 5 months old. And MasterCard's still working on their open APIs to make this possible.
Yeah, and I assume, so like with my Starbucks purchase, but the phone is secured with a PIN, so I'd have to know the PIN to get in it, and then I could, in theory, they could build in two-factor authentication and beep it, and then I have to put a PIN in for the transaction, or maybe I have to put a PIN in to get to the, because that's a QR code, right, that shows up that they beep when it goes through. To get that, any chance someone could swipe that QR code and know anything about my account there at Starbucks? Is that possible?
In fact, it is depending on I cannot comment on specifically, but I would expect that QR to be a one-time use QR code. Now, one of the major players in the market, mobile wallet market, is Square Wallet. Now, they have Square checkout stands and Square readers available at Best Buy, and, you know, a merchant could go and purchase that iPad-based Square checkout stands. Now, but they also have, on the consumer side, a Square Wallet. You could download that app on your device, on your mobile device, your Android, iPhone, both, and you can enter your all your credit cards that you have, irrespective. It could be a MasterCard, Visa, American Express, in Square Wallet. And it works the same way as your Starbucks does, except that your Starbucks app generates the QR code. In this case, a Square Wallet generates a one-time use QR code that once you use it, it cannot be used again. So essentially, rather than passing your credit card number or using NFC to pass it, it generates a one-time use QR code. That's another player that's in the market. And that's for there are competing technologies that are fighting with each other today to control the market. And we don't know how this is going to play out over the next year or two.
We want them to fight each other because that's going to give us the best, right? That's going to give us the best possible solution in the end, right?
Mm-hmm. And like we were talking about, it's kind of a situation wherein retailers are looking for customers to have the technology first, and the consumer is looking for more retailers to be out there before they adopt this technology. But there was one technology company that's kind of come up with a very novel idea, LoopPay. So Loop's a company that has come up with a key FOB, a key fob, that works with the existing checkout or readers that are in the market today. They don't have to be NFC capable. They don't have to be able to read QR codes. And what Loops take advantage of is the existing magnetic stripe technology. So today, when you take your credit card, you swipe through the reader. What it does is it reads the information that's recorded on your magnetic card. Stripe on your card, and what Loop does is, if you use the Loop app and you load all your credit cards on the Loop fob, all you need to do is take that Loop fob and touch it to the existing existing card readers. It could be 10 years old or 5 years old. What that Loop fob does is it creates a magnetic field just like your credit card would do. So essentially, you don't need any new technology to be able to keep all your cards together and not have to carry 5 or 7 cards. And that's very novel, except that it does not offer any more security than what your credit card does today. It's still based on the same magnetic induction that your card does. It does not require a PIN card for you to enter, or just like an in-app purchase or in-app payment would do, or for that matter, ISIS would require you to enter a PIN number twice to get into, first to enter into your phone and then to get into your ISIS wallet. But that's a novel way to get over the time frame or the period until the retailers have newer readers installed in their locations.
So what are you? So we've kind of covered what's out there, what's currently prominent right now. When we think about the future, and I want to spend a lot of time on this because it's just that, it's the future. We have no idea, right? We can speculate till we're blue in the face, but it doesn't matter until it actually happens. What are you excited about coming up here in the future in the area of payment or in using technology for this stuff?
Yeah, I'm actually very interested and looking forward to what this new consortium that has been formed together of all the retailers coming together. The major retailers in the country, Target, 7-Eleven, Best Buy, Rite Aid, have formed this consortium called MCX. If you go to the website mcx.com, you can see it. What they're essentially trying to do is nothing different than what everybody else is trying to do. They're trying to take control of the mobile payments. You know, wireless providers are doing it through their ISIS wallet here in the United States. Technology companies through Google Wallet and Square Wallet. PayPal is doing its own thing. And the retailer said, well, at the end of the day, the customer will be coming to our store and using the card. We want to control the payment. So they have come together to form this consortium, which will enable, I believe, in some form, a QR code-based payment from your mobile phones. They still don't have a lot of details out yet, but except that they will have something for consumers later towards the end of this year. And it is expected that they might even cut out the credit cards altogether and then go off QR codes directly debit to your bank account so as to save merchants the transaction costs of accepting credit cards. Mm-hmm. That might happen, but that's the most... And the fact that they are... The entire group of retailers that have come together are ones... They're pretty big. Walmart's one of those. Best Buy is one of those. They are so huge that... They accept almost $1 trillion worth of payments every year. Mm-hmm. That they will really move the market. Who knows? They might be able to pick up some traction.
Well, and remember a couple of years ago when Walmart tried to circumvent the process, and if it said debit card, they didn't want you to hit credit, right? Because a lot of these, you know, the idea of the debit card was coming on, and they were paying so many transaction fees. They really, because it's a different system. It's a different exchange when you use your debit card than when you use your credit card. Right. And so Walmart pushed it, and for a while they were not letting you. If it said debit, you click debit. I shouldn't say they didn't let you, but they discouraged you from doing credit. Oh, no, that's a debit card. Put debit and then put your PIN in because it was cheaper for them. Walmart does millions of transactions a day, and, of course, that equates to millions of dollars in exchange fees.
That's correct. So we'll see how that shakes up, but I guess the next 1.5-2 years are going to be very interesting from both the plastic card standpoint, getting the EMV chips, as well as mobile wallet with all these different competing technologies being in the market and trying to gain a foothold in the market and trying to control it. The one wild card that nobody knows about today is Apple. You know, it has, folks say, about 600 million credit cards in the iTunes account, credit cards linked to a different iTunes account. Now, what's going to happen? That's a wild card. Will they enhance their existing iBeacons to process payments? Will they start supporting NFC in the next iPhone? Who knows what they're going to do, except that Tim Cook recently made a statement that it's an exciting area that they're interested in, but with all the secrecy that comes with Apple, nobody knows what they're going to do and where they're going to want the market to go.
I'm just looking forward to someday saying Apple the next Microsoft. So, you know, that's the small little joke for the podcast here. It'll be interesting to see. There's some things out there in the future. It's just really hard. I mean, sometimes we as consumers want these changes to go into, you know, place, and there's such big money in this, and nobody wants to lose market share. They don't want to lose any earnings. They don't want to be cut out. I mean, just the whole... the whole fact that there's a battle over, you know, when we talk about wallet or ISI or ISIS. Square, you know, some of those, there's a battle for your, you know, to take your payment at this point, and it's interesting. Some good stuff. Anything else that that we didn't cover along this topic that that you might think would be interesting for somebody to hear?
I guess just for folks who are interested in you know, making some extra money, at least for the folks in United States, just make sure if you have one of the compatible phones, check out ISIS. They are one of the most aggressive ones. They're offering a free Jamba Juice smoothie every single day. You pay with ISIS, and that's been great. I mean, every time I pass by Jamba Juice, I make sure I stop by and I pay with my ISIS, and they said, sir, you're good. You don't have to pay anything. It's free. And that's been going on for the last 4 months. So they've been pretty aggressive.
That's a lot of Jamba Juice there, sir. Yeah. We got to get you to stay home a little more often so you're not buying so much Jamba Juice.
So, but they're pretty out there, and they're spending money, I guess, hundreds of dollars just to make sure that you stay engaged with the ISIS wallet rather than trying to select anything else.
Yeah.
We'll see how that shakes out.
Yeah, there'll be, like everything else, there'll be some loss leaders. I remember Christmas of, 97, they moved. Let me think about this here for a second. So, yeah, Christmas 97, 98, Amazon was coming on, right? And they were just really starting to hit the ground running. And they were, every time you'd buy from Amazon, in the box would be a $10 or a $20 coupon. I mean, that Christmas, I mean, I bet we saved $200 in Amazon bucks, whatever they were.
Yeah.
But it got us in the habit, right? It got us using those using those services, and now you don't even think twice about Amazon. You know, you the other day I needed I'm going to do a remote. In fact, I've got the stuff right here, not strategically, but we're going to do a remote podcast. And a couple weeks ago, or back at Christmas, Dave McCabe sent me for Christmas present some lighting. So there's a stand and a light here and you know, and then a lighting rig. And I'm going to do a podcast in a dark spot, right? Here's the light. Here's the light for it. So, but I don't have an umbrella, right? I'm short an umbrella. So, I mean, it's a 1 minute deal. Go on, find the umbrella, $8.75, buy Prime shipping. It's there. It's on its way. You know, you don't even think, you know, of course, you go through somebody's affiliate link when you do that, right? Now, I can't use my own, so I end up using somebody else's, but it's so ingrained now, they don't have to do those incentives. It sounds like to me that those companies are really making a run at getting you hooked on those by offering some of these freebies.
Yeah.
That, you know, I know, like Starbucks, they'll give you free points for loading your card one time, right? Just put $10 on it. You know, or something like that, and you can get some pretty good deals.
Yep.
Some free stuff.
Yeah, one of the good deals around that I found is if somebody has a Barclays card. Barclays has is an affiliate for American Express gift cards. So for buying an American Express gift card from American Express, they're offering you almost 4.5%. So essentially, there are coupon codes that you could use, which takes off the purchase fees. So I just bought, like, recently $1,000 gift card, American Express gift card, paid with my Barclays card, which gives me 2%, and that Barclays gave me another 4% for using their affiliate link. So essentially I got $1,000 Amex gift card for $940 that I can use anywhere just where I would have used my $1,000 credit card, right? So that's just great.
You've mentioned this idea of gift card purchasing now a couple times. So are you in a regular habit, especially when they do those kind of deals, of just buying the gift card, and then you just use the gift cards for purchases, or how does that work?
I try to. I mean, for purchases, like our son's daycare, you know, they accept credit cards. They accept any mode of payment. So rather than using my credit card to pay them, I buy a gift card just like this way through the affiliate links, get another 6% back, and then use that gift card, American Express gift card, to pay them. On the other hand, there are cases when I'm buying a product, for example, from Amazon, or buying a camera, for example, or a computer or a laptop. I use my credit card because the credit card, normally, pretty much every credit card here in the U.S., from what I know, gives you an additional year of warranty. So if you get a 1-year standard manufacturer warranty, they double it up for up to an extra additional year. Plus, you get a whole lot of other perks. For example, 90-day return protection. So if the retailer would not take it back, your MasterCard or Visa or the card issuer would pay you for that product. 90-day lost or stolen protection. So if you lose it, or if it gets stolen or you break it, within 90 days, they pay for it. So for items that I know I need a warranty on, I use my card, credit card, regular credit card, to get those additional benefits. But if it's for a service or it's for groceries, I try to buy gift cards up front at a discount and then pay for those purchases.
Yeah, we used to, just a funny story, and you might have been around when we do this, we used to go to Hoo Hut all the time. And
yeah.
Yeah, and so we would buy, they always at Christmas time, they had like buy $100 worth of gift cards.
Get 20 extra.
Yeah, we'll give you $20. And so everybody would pitch in, and then we would buy, and then they would raffle off. Let's see, how'd that work? We would raffle off
at the end who was part of the lunch.
Right.
Who paid for the lunch.
We used to do that all the time.
But the one thing that I've seen is buying store gift cards. Like in this case, this would be a Hoo Hut store gift card. You cannot use it anywhere else other than Hoo Hut's.
Right.
You would get stuck. If you have $20, $10 left, you would really have to go back to that retailer. And that's what they're banking on. That's why they're giving you that extra dollar sometimes, because they think you're going to take it back. You might just lose the card or forget it or not bring it next time. And that's their money for as long as you don't use it. The other side, what I was talking about was more on the American Express side of things, a card you can use anywhere. Essentially, you're getting a credit card, you're buying a debit card at a discount.
Right.
So essentially, 5 or 6% discount you can use anywhere.
And how would I know if the credit card companies are American Express in this case, how would I know when they're offering these kinds of deals? What's the easiest way to find out about these things?
Again, it's a deal alert that I set up on certain sites, or you can set up in Google as well. There are blogs that kind of focus specifically on using how to maximize your rewards from credit cards.
Maybe you can throw a few of those in the show notes, right? And I'll just post those sites so folks can head out. In this case, theaverageguy.tv/HT162 will take you right to, if you're watching the recorder or listening to the MP3 of this, I've posted it by now and it's out there. You can take a look. And Sarah will list a few of those sites for us.
I will, sure.
Very cool. Well, that was a quick hour.
Yeah.
That goes pretty fast. Yeah, pretty nice. That's cool. Very good. Anything else?
Right. No, I guess if there are any questions for us.
Right now they're wondering what Hoo Hut is. In the chat. So I don't know. Is Hoo Hut, is that a Nebraska? I don't know if that's a Nebraska chain or if that's, anyways, it's Mongolian Grill. And so you go in and load up your bowls with it's a buffet. You load up your bowls with fresh stuff.
Yeah, it's a Mongolian Grill.
Yeah.
And I think it's more Midwest and chain more than anything
fill
else.
Fill a bowl and they cook it for you on the Mongolian Grill. And it's always fun, though, to go. You know, we have a pretty international office, and a lot of the guys from India are vegetarians, or they don't want their meat cooked. You know, you can have chicken, right? And so that's always a challenge because they get up there and they're like, okay, it's got to be kind of cooked in a clean spot. It's like, it can't. It's always a challenge. The U.S. is not set up for that kind of cooking or that kind of those kinds of diet restrictions. You know, everybody just kind of goes, yeah, we're the land of hamburgers.
You wouldn't believe it, Jim. Just earlier this morning, I was reading that on one of the news sites back in India that Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC, has been in India for almost 10 years now. And, you know, just the name suggests Kentucky Fried Chicken, right? They are coming out with a whole bunch of vegetarian options for its restaurants back in India, just specifically from folks in India. Because
that's great.
Even I did not know the statistics, but 42% of Indians are vegetarians. So Kentucky Fried Chicken in India would be offering vegetarian options. And that list is only going to increase going forward.
That's hilarious. Sarb, I got to figure out a way to break a podcast into India. I talk to Amish about this all the time. You know, we've had Amish on. He covered the iPad Mini a couple months ago. And I keep saying, man, if I could just break into the India, you know, the market there for podcasts, we could be huge there. Any advice to me? What kind of podcast should I do if I'm going to break into the market?
Unfortunately, I've lived here too long to kind of.
How long have you been in the U.S. now? Because you started at Motorola, right?
Yeah, I started with Motorola back in 2003. So it's been 11 years now.
Wow, you've been here a long time. You're basically an American. You're westernized.
I don't know about that, but I've definitely lost a bit of a touch with stuff going back out, stuff that's going back home.
We were just talking in the pre-show. You call your you talk at home via Skype every couple of days.
Yeah, I do that. I do a video chat, and because that's kind of our mode of keeping in touch, and my parents to be able to see their grandson, for him to be able to see them. Yeah.
How old is he now?
He will be 2 in about 2 months, in June.
Cool. Man, seems like that was just yesterday we were celebrating that with you. So for those of you who joined late or didn't catch us in the very beginning, Sarv and I, we worked together at Gallup. We were hired just a weeks apart, and I joined his group and managed his group for about a year and a half, 2 years, and we did some Oracle. Oh, one of the questions early on was somebody mentioned Oracle databases. You're actually an Oracle apps developer, right?
That's correct. And I primarily work on the EBS CRM side of things, customer relationship management. Oracle EBS applications.
Yeah, Oracle. And that the technology behind that is primarily what? What do you need to know? If you're going to be an Oracle apps developer, what do you need to know?
Well, it used to be primarily a lot of business knowledge, business process knowledge, as well as Oracle PL/SQL. But a lot of that has morphed now, from Oracle reports and forms to Java. So if you know Java and you know some database programming, you definitely can pick up some of the business process related stuff, the functional knowledge, and you're on your way.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I look for Java developers all the time, and I try to convince them, you know, we use not only in the apps, but in the Oracle ADF space. You know, we're doing some development with their enterprise integration software. It's Java-based in a lot of ways, or at least a good solid knowledge of Java helps you out. And I keep telling these kids, man, you really ought to look at Oracle. There's not a lot of people doing it, and everybody needs them. And so Oracle is winning that on the enterprise side. Oracle's winning that space right now. If you use a piece of software, there's a good chance Oracle owns it at this point. They have bought it, or Microsoft's bought it. There's not too many independent ERP or, you know, financials software. You know, even, you know, PeopleSoft, JD Edwards, they were both bought by Oracle, and Oracle seems to be buying everybody. So it's not a bad place to be. Although as you're moving into it more, I'm moving away from it. So this is my last Oracle user group meeting that we're doing here. April 24th here in Omaha. When are you coming back? When are we going to see you again?
Yeah, that's been up in the I kind of have to plan my next trip. It's been a while. It's been quite a few months that I've not been there. And
It'd be good to see you again. I can't remember the last time I did. I think I saw you for a few minutes. We are passing ships in the night when you're back in Omaha. Sarv is in Seattle. His wife has a job out there, and so we let him work from home, from the home office in Seattle, so to speak. And I miss seeing you on a daily basis. But it seemed to work out okay for you to do the telecommuting or do the, you know, be the remote office worker. You know, Gallup released that that report that said most remote workers are disengaged. So,
yes,
I'm assuming you're very engaged.
Well, I believe so, and I hope Gallup believes the same as well.
Listen, when Gallup put that report out, and Jim Clifton, our CEO, he blogged about it on LinkedIn, and that's what started the fire. And every remote worker in the planet as soon as that report came out from Gallup, everybody called their boss or sent them an email, and underneath that blog, the comments, it was every remote worker in America saying, "You're wrong. I'm totally engaged." So it's just kind of funny how that worked out when that blog went live.
Yeah, that's...
All right. Well, Sarb, thanks. I hope it was everything you hoped this podcast would be. I thank you for coming on and walking through with just a smidgen of maybe what you know. You did very well. And we used to joke all the time. I used to have one-on-ones with you, and we'd always do them in the afternoon, and I'd always be tired. You have the most soothing... Well, I mean, when you speak, you just—it's soothing to me. I would get really sleepy when you and I were doing one-on-ones, and I always had to apologize. I'm like, it's not you. It's not boring. It's just your voice is soothing. So very cool. Very cool. I made it through the podcast though, so I think I'm.
You're still up, yeah. Maybe I think that was the coffee before that you had before the podcast.
Maybe so. Or, well, I don't know. I had a blue moon earlier. Oh. Then I've got a little rum with my soda here, so that helps me get through the podcast. Well, Sarb, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you doing this. We'll have to do it again. We'll give it a month or two or three or whatever. And would you come back if I asked?
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. I'd love to. Yeah,
good to have you back. And maybe we'll, you know, I was doing a financial tech podcast with Andrew Hunt, the credit union, and we're going to morph that a little bit. You know, there's a lot of morphing of my podcast going on. One of the things that I've been working on, of course, the Gallup podcasts have gone gangbusters. And so we're doing 200, 300, 400 live on those when we do them. We do them every Thursday. If you go to coaching.gallup.com, that is my work life and podcasting that we're doing out there every other Thursday, every other Friday. So one a week, but alternating Thursdays and Fridays. Fridays are called the coach. Thursdays are theme Thursdays. We dive into the Strengths Finder. And on Thursdays, we dive in and look at one theme every single one theme that week or that program and really blow it out and talk about it and how it mixes with other themes. If you haven't taken the Gallup Strengths Finder, something you might be interested in doing, it's just $10 out on our site, gallupstrengthscenter.com. Pretty good deal. And if you're struggling with maybe you want to know who you are, you want to know more about yourself or know what you're good at, Strengths Finder is a great way to do it. Sarb, can you rattle off your top five? Are you able to, you know those right off the top of your head?
Yeah, Woo Responsibility, Maximizer, Achiever, and Woo Responsibility, Maximizer, Achiever. I'm missing one.
I know, it's that last one that always gets you.
Relator.
Oh, yeah, Woo and Relator in your top five.
I do, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, and Woo's two. This is why you and I get along really well, I think, is because we are both strong Woos, and we both have Relator in there, and that makes us people, you know, people. I like to hang out with people and do that and be friendly and those kinds of things. And so if you haven't taken this yet, the Gallup Strengths Finder, like I said, gallupstrengthscenter.com, or if you're just wondering what I'm talking about when we talk about the Strengths Finder with Gallup, you can go out to the Gallup Strengths Center. That's just gallupstrengthscenter.com. Follow at Strengths Finder on Twitter. There's a lot of stuff going on there. Of course, if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see I have this weird dual life going on right now where I'm tweeting about work and then I tweet about my podcasts and I'm doing more work live tweeting now than I've ever done. So I'm, you know, we have CSF, hashtag CSF chat, and we're doing these live tweets, and there's Strengths chat that's going on out there. So we've been spending a lot of time doing that. So my Twitter account has picked up. So if you're following me on Twitter, and there's about 1,000 of you that do, and if I'm spamming you, I'm sorry. It's just I'm trying to use Twitter for work going forward. So let's see, what else? Anything? Home Gadget Geeks, we talked about at the beginning of the show. So if you just joined us live, we talked about why we're moving to Home Gadget Geeks up front. Just re-listen to the show and get it there. Next week, the 17th, April 17th, 2014, we're doing a photo tech show. So photo being photography, and our friend Mike Howard, Sess White, and Tim Kimberly, I think is what it is. I got to make sure I get that right. We Tim will come on, and we're going to talk about photography tech. So if you're an amateur or a pro photographer and you want to get to jump in the mix, we'd love to have you come out. We get the same guys that come out every single week, Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out at theaverageguy.tv/live. And love to have you come out and join us. I get about 1,000 downloads every single week, and only about 25 of you come out live, and we'd love to have a few more join us. So if you're thinking about it next Thursday, set an Outlook calendar reminder, do something. Come out and join us live, and we'd love to have you there. The week after that, David Washington from Microsoft, he's a Microsoft evangelist, will come out. We haven't seen David since the beginning of the year, and David's going to talk to us a little bit about what's going on at Microsoft and some of the new things that are happening with Surface, and we can kind of pin him down and say, hey, are you guys going to do a Surface Mini or not? All right, so good opportunities. If you didn't hear, my MVP was renewed, so I'm still an MVP, but no longer in the Windows Home Server area. I'm now a Windows expert. Who would have thought, right? So who would have thought I'd be a Windows expert? It just really allows me to stay in the program. That's really what it means. It's a great deal to be a Microsoft MVP. You get about $600 worth of, well, MSDN for free. That's $5.99 or whatever it is, $4.99. And then I get $100 of Azure credit every single month. That's not a bad deal. Have you tried Azure yet, Sarg?
No, I have not.
Yeah, it's something I'm going to get you into. You're an Oracle guy, so you don't have an MSDN subscription. Which
no,
is,
I do not, no. Yeah.
But, you know, you can run all the Oracle servers on Azure. They're all there. You have to check that out. And so David Washington's coming on the 24th, and then May 1st, Michael Crump will be back, and Michael is a mobile developer, and we're going to talk about what's going on with him. He works for Telerik. And they're doing some cool stuff over there as well. And so we'll talk to him, see what he's been up to. This guy travels the world. And so we get an opportunity to kind of see what's going on with him. Don't forget, we've got Cyber. But if you're listening to this on the weekend, you've already missed it. But Cyber Frontiers, if you're listening live, we'll have Cyber Frontiers 3. Brand new branding for that, by the way, too. It's on its own feed. It's its own iTunes feed now for Cyber Frontiers. You want to go out to iTunes and just search Cyber Frontiers. We got I don't have the links for it yet on theaverageguy.tv, but Cyber Frontiers, Christian Johnson, we have a guest this week. So tomorrow afternoon, 4 p.m. Central, I think that's right, 4 to 5, is that right? Oh, shoot, I should know that. Check the Twitter. He just tweeted. Let me check that real quick, just while you're out there. Cyber Frontiers, episode 3, he didn't post the time. Come on, Christian, 4 p.m. I bet that's Central, or I bet that's Eastern. 3 p.m. Central, I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Tomorrow afternoon, you can join us for Cyber Frontiers. Lots of good stuff coming out of Christian. If you haven't seen Christian in the news, you haven't been looking. So this kid was just featured on the Wall Street Journal, which is really cool. And so he's got some stuff coming up with the Washington Post as well, and is getting featured in other places. Listen, we have a star on our hands with Christian Johnson. So tomorrow afternoon, join in for Cyber Frontiers. Just follow me on Twitter, and all that stuff is coming out. I think that's everything. So, Sarv, again, thank you for coming on. Great having you. And we'll do it all again next Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv live. Stay around for the post show. If you're here live, good night, everybody.